Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The truth is out there. And here, who knows, but either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps, a new X-Files rewatch slash first watch podcast. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here to officially embark on a brand new journey here on Post Show Recaps. The plane has taken off the runway. Hopefully no turbulence here as we touch down into what is sure to be a very weird and wonderful time making our way through the X-Files. More on that in a little bit. But of course, I gotta welcome in my partner here on the case, my lovely wife, Angela Bloom. Angela, how are you?
Hey, I'm here. I'm good. I'm ready to go.
All right, she's ready to go. She's chomping at the bit right now, ready to
chomping.
Step, ready to step into the rain, spray paint everywhere.
So much rain.
Too much rain.
Maybe too much rain.
So people might have skipped out. We did put out an intro podcast last week, but there might have been some people that were just also chomping a la Angela and was just like, oh, I see X-Files in the title and I want to click on this, and may have missed our preview podcast last week. So I'm going to do a bit of a rewind just for a few minutes to sort of give like a TLDL of what happened last week. Basically, this is a brand new podcast that is going to go over the Supernatural show from the late 90s and early 2000s. The X-Files. Angela has seen The X-Files many, many times.
Probably too many times.
Loves the show. I have never seen The X-Files before. Up to this point, I saw my first episode for the purposes of this podcast.
I was going to say, liar.
Exactly. Maybe I should have just tried to like fake my way through it. Yeah. Like, and then this happened and you'd call me out on as many details as possible.
I do that.
But essentially what we decided to do was go through this journey together, where Angela is going to walk me through selected episodes from the first 9 seasons of The X-Files over the next several months. Some of these podcasts are going to have one episode in them, like we're experiencing this week. Some might have 2 episodes, some might have 3 episodes, some might even have a movie in them. But whether you are a new viewer like me or a returning viewer like Angela, we're going to talk through the series from a couple different perspectives. You know, what is it like to approach the show from a 2020 lens? What is it like to approach the show for the very first time? That being said, we're going to try to remain as spoiler-free as possible. At least we'll try to be vague about future events. I don't know why I'm saying we. I don't know what's coming.
Yeah, I was going to say, will be as vague as possible. I think that there are some things to note that we are a selection of podcasts that we're, or episodes that we're going to be podcasting about are my selection. So, you know, they may not be ones you would pick, but hopefully you can sort of join the ride and enjoy it from our perspective. You know, so there will be things that we don't talk about. You know, so hopefully you will watch the series in full. That's to you, Mike, at some point in your life.
So this is not even to the royal you. This is like
No. Yeah. Hopefully this will inspire you to maybe fill in those gaps at a later date. But yeah, I'll be as vague as possible. Do what I can.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, you may quibble with where we go, but you cannot quibble with where we start here as we're talking about the pilot. And just so you know, the structure of this podcast, now I'm referring to the royal you, the structure of this podcast, we're going to go through the episode proper. So letting you all know right now that we are going to be spoiling the events of Pilot, the first episode of The X-Files. If you have not engaged in watching it or rewatching it yet, you can. The research I've done in between our podcasts here seems to indicate that The X-Files is available to stream on Hulu, on YouTube TV, on Fubo TV, on something called Philo. I believe the episodes are also able to be purchased on Amazon Prime as well. So there are definitely ways to watch it if you have the means.
Yeah, it's out there, so to speak. So Yeah, I'm super excited to jump in here. I think that there's a lot to talk about, not mm-hmm. only from a perspective of how what you thought, but also my rewatch. I was pretty excited.
Yeah. When was the last time you watched the pilot?
I think we talked about my rewatch when our son Asher was born, mm-hmm. and that was in 2019. So I imagine then.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a couple of years, but obviously I think there was a lot going on at that time. Yeah.
Was I really watching that closely? Maybe not.
Yeah. But I gotta say, I really enjoyed this pilot. Now, I think one of the big questions I have coming in is, Michael J. Clarke can attest to this himself, that sometimes a pilot is not indicative of where a series mm-hmm. will go. Is this the case with the X-Files? Is this a good sort of microcosm of what the series is?
Yes and no. So, I mean, I think we talked about it last time about there being sort of a couple different types of episodes in the X-Files. You know, some of them being more Monster of the Week, some of them being tied to a larger story arc for the series. I think this one falls somewhere in between because there is not necessarily a Monster of the Week, but there is a crime. There's an investigation.
is a crime.
Yeah, it's very much so a Law and Order setup where it has that sort of feel of, you know, especially, I mean, we'll get right into it, but the cold open itself, mm-hmm. it just jumps you right
in. Cold open where the body's cold.
Where the body's cold, exactly. So I think that the episode is a pretty good representation of most of the series in that you have this something that's being solved, some sort of mystery, but you're also getting a lot of character and you're getting a lot of story around them as well.
Yeah, and we're being introduced to obviously like Mulder, mm-hmm. Scully, I don't know who else, like, I don't know if we're ever going back to, like, this wackadoo Oregon town.
Yeah, so I don't remember if we go back to the town, but you do see some of the characters again.
Okay.
And I'll say that, like, to your point where some pilots aren't representative of the series because of the fact that I do think there's a lot of world building, you know, and so you end up not with having a lot of action, whereas with the X-Files, there's already a lot of action going on, and that sort of ties into the fact that they're solving a mystery, they're in the field, they're agents on the ground, but mm-hmm. yeah, I think that it sort of does stand apart from some of those pilots that may be a little bit more on the boring end.
Well, before we actually get into the pilot proper, I realize, Angela, there was a question that we maybe should have discussed last time and definitely needs to be had as we get into the X-Files proper, which deals with this idea of extraterrestrial life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you an alien?
Am I an alien?
Yeah,
I'll never tell.
We've known each other for nearly like 15 years at this point. No, I mean, the question is, you know, on the spectrum of Scully to Mulder here, where do you fall in your beliefs? Do you believe in life out there?
Yes, I think I do. And I think that Mulder...
Do you believe, though, in life after love, more importantly?
Of course. I think that Mulder is remembered as being kind of a cuckoo alien guy.
Yes, he's spooky Mulder.
He's spooky Mulder. But that being said, I mean, he says it a few times in the episode that we've just watched. You know, he says, I'm trying to figure this out just as much as you are, to Scully. Like, he wants to believe, mm-hmm. not that he is an avid believer. You know, I think that for him, it's all about finding the truth. And I think that that's probably where I land, is more somebody that pretty sure that we're not alone, but, you know, not necessarily somebody who's like walking around with like a poster that says like, you know, come take me away or whatever in Roswell, New Mexico, you know? So I think that it's easy to relate to Mulder in that regard.
Well, I think especially nowadays when I think people are like, get me off of this rock. Well, that's really sort of where I've come around as well, is honestly, it's like, I look around at humanity and I'm like, this can't be it.
You know, it's true. And I think that we've talked about this before, but my sort of desire or interest in more existential thought probably led me down the X-Files rabbit hole much earlier. And now you're more developed as a human being. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're interested in exploring some of these themes as well. And also given your recent interest in things like Star Trek and sort of diving back into the Star Wars world.
Right, like
you know?
your imagination can't help run free of like, oh, well, what if there was someone with three eyes?
Yeah, and I think there's also this aspect of mistrust in our government mm-hmm. That sort of... I think, you know, maybe they hoped that was secluded to the 90s, but mm-hmm. It wasn't, and it has continued. So, you know, are aliens around and are they being covered up, I think is maybe a metaphor for some other things as well.
I mean, to that point, I also wonder if, like, Earth right now is sort of like that person you find on that dating app who just like has all the wrong qualities. Like, oh, I'm going to swipe right on
this. Yeah, I don't even know which way you swipe.
I don't know, just swipe up?
Yeah, did you swipe? Which way do you...
Swipe or no swiping?
Swipe or no swiping, yeah. Clearly, we met in college. But I think also there's... You think about movies like Men in Black, and like their understanding of the universe is much larger. And then you... That's... Even that pivotal scene at the end of Men in Black when the world is a marble and aliens are playing with it. Like, yes, yeah. we're not that important. Get over yourself.
Yeah, well, let's... On that very sobering note, let's get into the episode here. All right, so... We open on a couple of really interesting things. I have some stuff to say.
The cold open.
Yeah. I have some stuff to say right off the bat.
Hit me.
Unsurprisingly, I was very surprised by the runtime of this episode.
Yeah, it's a little long.
48 minutes. Yeah, because, I mean, what I'm used to seeing from a network TV perspective, whether it be something like Lost or Survivor, is like an even 42 minutes. And I don't know if this speaks to Fox, like, I don't know, being a little bit more lax as the new kid on the block at that time, or like maybe more relaxing the standards for a show like The X-Files. But I'm happy we got the additional 6 minutes.
Yeah. And I honestly, I always thought that it was a little bit longer because it's just the pilot. And I'll be honest, I don't usually look at run times. I kind of am just like, it's around 45 minutes. It's around an hour. Like, that's not something that I'm focused on. So, you know, pointing that out is interesting. And I will be interested to see the next episode that we do watch. How long is it?
It could also be maybe an oppositional thing, less so that they want to give more time to the X-Files and more so that maybe sponsors did not want to put their stuff around the X-Files.
Potentially. I mean, but I do think that aliens and sort of this taboo subculture was popular at the time. So I imagine,
like, no way am I getting these Lay's commercials around this freaky dicky alien show.
Okay. Simmer down.
Well, so another thing, the very first thing we see in this episode kind of stunned me because I'm still a little confused about it. We get a sort of disclaimer.
Yeah, we do. Up.
The following story is inspired by actual documented accounts. Angela, can you like, can we put this up to the lie detector? Is this true? Is this like a tongue-in-cheek Fargo-esque thing?
Yeah, so I do think they're going for more of that tongue-in-cheek, you know, like what you're watching could be real, like the government could be hiding aliens. It's something they abandon, like, as the series goes on. It's, you know, I think that that was something that was being done a lot. You know, things like the Blair Witch Project and things that were like fabricated to look like reality in a way.
Yeah, like they want to come across like, as real as possible. So like, you could be like, oh, this is happening in your backyard.
Exactly. Yeah. To bring you a little bit closer to it. But I don't think that necessarily their expectation is that you do believe that it's like you're watching a documentary. That's not what they're going for.
So like, I wouldn't put it in a call to Fox being like, I can't believe you showed that documentary.
And I'm also not 100% sure that they weren't just putting that up to, disclaimer what was happening in Oregon and not so much the show. So unclear. I'll have to look into that.
All right. So we start off here literally hitting the ground running as we have this poor girl in her nightgown.
You're upset about this nightgown.
I'm very confused because I don't know. I feel like I see this all the time, like people wearing nightgowns. I feel like I've never seen someone in real life wear a nightgown.
Yeah, so this is, I don't think it's something people do much now, but I do think that people in the 80s and 90s were continuing to wear nightgowns. Like, it's just what you wore at night. They, like, girls weren't wearing PJ pants.
So was there like a formative event where like everyone was just like, I'm done with the nightgown, let me wear what I want?
I think it's like our generation, our like millennial. No, I'm serious. Like, PJ pants were like a thing that like girls wanted to wear.
Millennials kill the nightgown?
They may have. But yeah, I don't think that it's something that you see as often nowadays, unless it's like an older person in a show wearing a nightgown. So I think it's just generational. It's gone away.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of nightgown, the first thing I think of, first I think Wee Willie Winkie from the old
Wendy from Peter Pan.
Wendy from Lee. And I'm thinking about like the image of like the Ma and her curlers and like goop on her
That's
face.
What I'm saying. Like, I just think it's a dated thing, but I don't think it's out of place here.
All right.
Plus, it signifies that she is coming from sleeping.
Yeah, so Nightgown Girl is running her way through the woods here. I was admittedly...
Were you scared?
No, because I was more so intrigued because you really stoked my interest last time on the podcast talking about Mulder's backstory. Mm. And so call me like the guy with the butterfly meme. I asked myself, is this Mulder's sister?
No, it's not.
No, clearly was not. But when I saw an alien, I'm like, oh, this might be... I thought maybe in another version of the episode, this could have been the cold open.
Yes,
like the flashback to Mulder.
And I do think that, I mean, there's a lot of things in this pilot that I forgot they cover right away. I mean, I forget that you learn about Mulder's sister right away. Mm-hmm. And I forget that there are all these pivotal characters that appear like straight up. So I think that that's sort of interesting. tie to the cold open.
One thing that gets covered, Nightgirl Gown's body, because she gets visited by some sort of like weird faceless entity of light.
Yeah.
And then the next day they find her body, and the only signifying mark, Angela, is what I would loosely describe as like two red Skittles.
Yeah,
they're like placed on her back.
They definitely look like little like risen birthmarks type of situation.
Or like if you've gotten like cupped before at a massage, like
tiny little cups.
Little cups on your back.
But I do think it's interesting as well, because you're talking about sort of this girl running through the woods, and then this guy coming up to her, and he's like bathed in light. And I think last time we talked about sort of the effects that they do in the show, and like straight away there's an effect that's not practical, but I think I had mentioned that most of the non-practical effects are light based anyway. Right. So like they do this thing throughout the episode where they're there's just light over the horizon.
Yeah, they do this. They really like the thing of like someone standing at the top of the hill and there's light from the
and
back.
Even if nobody's standing there, it's like, what's that light and that mechanical humming? So,
all right. So that's the end of our cold open, right? We sort of get our little CSI moment of like, oh my God, she's dead.
What happened?
It's happening again, isn't it?
Yes, it's happening again.
What happened with the class of 1989? Angela, you and I were born in 1989.
We were.
So I think this year works on many, many levels, because this is going to serve as our entry point to this podcast. And also, this is going to be the entry point to Scully into the X-Files here, because the next thing we get is we are introduced to Dana Scully. You made a note that Scully is rocking the pantsuit.
Oh, and she keeps on rocking them.
Really?
Yeah, so I mean, there's Work Scully and then there's Field Scully, and I think you saw the differences in this episode, but this was the time. This is what people wore during this time.
I gotta say also, Dana Scully's hair in Work Scully form is like, unbelievably good. Like,
cool.
Flowing. Like a shampoo commercial.
She has gorgeous hair, and there are times when her hair is styled in a way that is like quintessentially late 90s, early 2000s, and it's like a little upsetting, but like there's one time where she has a bob, and I feel like, the bob is not as great as this, but I mean, Gillian Anderson, gorge.
I mean, incredibly gorgeous.
And her and David Duchovny, it's just like they're so young. It's like alarming.
I know. See, we're going to see babyface David Duchovny later specifically. Maybe it's because like I'm used to seeing him specifically. I mean, obviously comparing to like Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher.
Right. Yeah. Now, it's like very jarring. But I think also throughout the run of the X-Files, you are supposed to really like David Duchovny is supposed to be like that. Like that diehard guy, like somebody who's like kind of attractive. He's like very like you're into him. He's the hot guy.
So he's Bruce Willis.
Like in Die Hard, like you're supposed to find him attractive. And I think that was lost on me as a teen because I was like a little too young.
You were not thirsting after Mulder.
No, but I do in retrospect watching it now, like you see things that they do to like in later episodes to like sex him up a little bit. And you're like,
well, they sex Scully up a little bit in this
they
episode.
Do.
There are some Gillian Anderson, like bra and panties stuff going on.
I forgot that that was a thing, but they do. They're like, yeah, no, she's smart. She's also hot. Like TTTTT.
Well, we find out more about her here outside of just the looks conversation that Scully is she's a little bit of a newer kid to the FBI.
Yes.
She was recruited out of medical school. I did not realize that could be a thing.
So I guess
going to medical schools to recruit people.
Yeah, I think they recruit people from all different walks of life. But yeah, she was recruited out of med school and she is a new agent, but she primarily works at Quantico, which is where they train FBI agents.
Yeah, she's a teacher.
And she's a professor. So I think that her field experience is very limited. So she's, sort of being asked now to sort of have her first big break as it comes to being an agent.
The book smarts apply to street smarts.
Yeah, that, and I think it's like, it's a lot for her, she gets her first big break and it's going down to the basement to hang with Spooky Mulder.
Yeah, can we talk about that for a second? So we get a little bit of like tell before we get the show of Mulder, right? He was an Oxford educated psychologist.
I will say the scene with Scully and the regional director, Blevins.
Blevins?
His name is Blevins.
Wow, what a crappy
name.
Well,
he's an old guy with glasses, but yeah, that scene, there is a lot of tell not showing, so. It really tickles
you. Sounds like if there was a guy named like Bevins, but he didn't want to use his real name. It's like, no, it's me, like Frederick Blevins.
Yeah, Frederick Blevins.
That's him.
I think his name is Scott Blevins.
But so we find out that Mulder, he earned this reputation of like he had been this like serial killer catcher for a while, and then he started really getting involved in the paranormal, and he earned the nickname Spooky Mulder. Mm-hmm. And this tickled me more than even the name of Blevins.
I forgot. I totally didn't tell you about that.
The derpiest nickname I've ever heard.
And I think it's supposed to be. Like, he was, like, sort of looked at as, like, a loser.
But the thing is, like, do you call him Spooky? Do you call him Spooky Mulder? Do you call him Spook?
You don't call him that. You talk about him behind his back.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. I just feel like to be, like, first off, I think using the term spooky to describe anybody is really weird.
It is weird, but I think it's also, it is what it is, Spooky Mulder.
Yeah, but I feel like spooky is more...
Hop on the spooky train.
I don't want to get on the spooky train to Booville or Boostin, if you will.
Nobody knows what you're talking about with that.
All right, so we were walking around. There were Halloween decorations out in our neighborhood. And
oh, Lord.
And there was an inflatable train that said Booville on the side.
Which I thought was completely reasonable.
I was a little miffed because I feel like they could have made a couple more passes at that from a copywriting perspective, because Boostin works on so many levels, right? It could be an Austin parody. It could be a Boston parody.
A Boostin parody.
There we go.
Anyway, every time we walk the dog or go for a walk with the baby, all I hear is Boostin.
It's my axe to grind.
Can't wait till next Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. Train's going to come back around. But here's Spooky Mulder.
Yeah, so basically they tell her, get down to the basement, debunk the X-Files. Like, mm-hmm.
And also in this scene, besides Blevins, is the cigarette-smoking man. He's that dude just sort of like...
Yeah, sort of smoking. He's a government official, I think, is just like maybe the boss of the person that is talking, I think, is what you're supposed to see it as.
I might be misappropriating the image. He kind of looks a little bit like Walter Matthau to me.
I can't remember what Walter Matthau looks like.
Have you ever seen Grumpy Old Men or Grumpier Old Men?
Oh, yeah. I guess so. He kind of does. He has like
a sad, saggy face.
He does have a sad, saggy face, but he's just constantly in the background, and I think you're supposed to understand him as, at least from my perspective, as somebody with influence in the government.
Like, he doesn't even need to talk, but he holds all the power in the
exactly.
room.
And he's like constantly there observing.
So we get our introduction to Mulder here. Mulder's first line is, of course, deadpan and sarcastic. It makes me realize, Angela, that I think Mulder might be like both the best and worst coworker to have.
Yes, because he's very dedicated to his job. He has a lot of commitment, and he is really good at his job too, and he's smart. But
He's so smarmy.
And I think they lean in a little heavier in the pilot, especially in their first introduction of him and his character. They're leaning into him being, you know, the kid who's kicked to the basement, you know, the one nobody likes, like, what'd you do to deserve getting assigned to me type of thing. But I think they do, even in this episode, like, lean back from it. And I think, you know, the part where they're in the woods and they're talking about, you know, believing in this stuff. And even Mulder's like, you know, I also need proof. Like, I'm looking for proof.
Right. He's not completely bought into it, right? But I think he's more bought into it than at least Scully.
Right, but you see him as a normal human and not just like a pun machine.
A normal human who's rocking those Harry Potter glasses, those round framed. I think
him and Scully both wear those glasses.
I think they work on them.
Yeah, no, they look great. It's very 90s, and I think those glasses have come back in fashion, too. Those sort of, like, round wireframe glasses, but...
Yeah, are you saying that because you own a pair of them?
I do. Gold.
So is this just the inception the entire time? You would wear the glasses to make me, like, just want to watch this episode more, even though I didn't know the glasses were in it?
Of course.
Well, good job of framing that for me. we get a little bit of, like, obviously, like, Mulder versus Scully, just sort of like them... Honestly, like, dressing up their own beliefs here, you know, Mulder basically being like, yeah, in my line of work, the laws of physics barely apply. Scully outright says, she gives the extraterrestrials don't exist argument, but I guess true to her character, I'm assuming it's very much based in science, right?
Yeah,
it takes too much energy to operate a spacecraft.
That kind of stuff. And then also, like, there's no proof that they exist from a scientific level. Like, it's like and her background is in physics and in medical, you know, stuff. So I think from her, it's very much so the science. I'll take it if there's proof to be taken.
Right.
And you see that right away in this episode that, you know, she's alarmed by the existence of these things,
she's very much like the, I'll believe it when I see it. So to that point, when she does see it, she believes it.
Yeah, so she's faced with things that she hasn't been, you know, sort of faced with before.
And I like Mulder's response to that. Like, when convention and science offer us no answers, might we turn to the fantastic as a possibility? That sounds like a very, like, Willy Wonka.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of the lane that he drives in a lot of the times is, like, There's no explanation for these things, so why can't we look outside the box?
Well, speaking of driving, or I guess flying, let's go to Oregon here. I will say, Mulder, is this a bit of a faux pas on Mulder's part to lie across the...
If you have the aisle to yourself on a plane,
do you lie across all the seats?
Yes, but no. I think that this was, again, an instance of them sort of heavy-handing his character a bit. You know, like, this is Mulder. He's, like, so chill. Like, he's so comfortable in his own skin. He's, like, such a cad, you know? Like, somebody who is just very like quippy and sarcastic.
I would say if you have to lay down across airplane seats, I say put your head towards the window. I think if you put your head near the aisle, it's going to get bumped by the drink cart like nine times out of ten.
But from a framing perspective, it had to be there.
And speaking of framing, we get a nice little fisheye close-up on the name Dr. Nemin from some research that Scully is reading up on. More about him later. But I thought it was interesting how they sort of like almost did a magnifying glass-esque shot of remember this name.
That was very like Law and Order, too. That was very like, this is the evidence. But I do think that... You know, Mulder doesn't even get shaken at all when the plane goes through some sort of weird turbulence.
Right.
Which, you know, you'll see later is important. But, yeah, I think that's, again, him just being sort of this, like, man about town. Like, nothing bothers me when it comes to the paranormal.
Well, so we really get a sense of that as they are driving around. First, okay, so talk to me about the sunflower seeds. So this is a thing Mulder likes to eat sunflower seeds?
Yeah, he eats sunflower seeds. So they're always, like, around.
Why?
It's a thing. He likes them. I don't know what to tell you.
Is there flavor in sunflower seeds?
I don't know. I don't eat sunflower seeds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't either. So I really don't know what the value is. Like, at least like a peanut.
I think they're probably salted. I think they're probably salted.
Okay.
But yeah, he eats sunflower seeds.
But it's I think, unlike an almond, like, I think there's just the idea of, like, detritus and shells that I'm assuming that backseat is, like, full of sunflower seeds.
Well, and I think also for him, it's more about, like, keeping your hands busy than it is necessarily about, like, snacking. You know, he's, like, it's almost like he has, like, a toothpick in his mouth.
Well, I wonder, to that point, like, maybe he was, like, a cigarette smoker back in the day. Because I do think, like, that's also a habit that people indulge in, right? It's, like, eating sunflower seeds or certain things to keep your hands busy, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I'm an expert on sunflower seeds, but...
All right, well, that's your goal for next time.
Research sunflower seeds.
Buy us a bunch of them.
We'll do taste tests
on the podcast.
That sounds like a nightmare for my OCD.
All right, well, let's talk about the magic radio and the magic car clock.
The magic. Well, yeah, so I guess I'll explain this since, you know,
we're
in it now. But the idea of alien abductions in the X-Files is always accompanied by a loss of time and a loss of like memory and also interruption of like mechanics and technology.
So it's like interference.
Yeah. So, and there's also these like hot spots where these things happen. So they, when they're driving into town, go through one of these hot spots. So they lose time and they lose not time yet, but they sort of, you know, lose interference with the car.
Yeah, the car itself,
like, just shuts down. Yeah. And I think that that's sort of a, like, the most basic explanation for this. And then later on when they're driving and they pass that spot again, they lose time because that's when supposedly, the character who is
Peggy.
Oh, am I allowed to say the names now? Yeah. Yes. So Billy Miles is going and bringing these women and like taking them to the abduction place. So
everyone, I thought it was just the people who get abducted lose time, but everyone loses time
if you're in that area. So they were driving right by the area in the woods where it was happening at 9:03.
Okay.
So Peggy like loses, like, is abducted at that time, and like that happens. So
wait, so does, like, is time physically lost, or is more so like you just don't remember those 9 minutes?
I think the latter.
Okay.
But again, I think there is a lot of quantum physics stuff that especially happens in this episode, and that they don't always explain super well. They just kind of like hope that you jump on the train for the ride, which I do.
I mean, speaking of that, so Mulder, like, as soon as he sees this freaky deakiness, stops the car, gets out the spray paint, and sprays a big old X.
So you're supposed to believe that this is something that he has experienced before and marks when he sees it.
I was going to say, so do you think he carried the spray paint with him?
Yes, for sure. That's something that he, like, this is, like, he and you'll learn this as we go on with the series, but he knows people who have quote unquote been abducted by aliens. Like mm-hmm. there's all these like organizations and clubs and stuff. And so he keeps track of that.
I would say never fancied Fox Mulder to be a graffiti artist, but I guess now he's the new Banksy.
Even has like one of those spray paint cans where you hold upside down. It's like a traffic one.
He's not Banksy. He's spooky.
He's spooky.
Just imagine him spray painting spooky as his tag.
But yeah, so they sort of do that. And then, Scully's just explaining it away with like, I don't know. And he's like, what's that about? And she's like, what's that about? And he like has no explanation. Well,
it's fine because they're on their way to do something important, Angela. They are going to go grave robbing.
Yeah, well, so you mentioned before Nemen.
Mm-hmm.
So once they get off the plane, Scully aptly points out that the person who was the medical examiner on the autopsy of the first two victims from Oregon with the two little Skittles on them was not the same as the second and the third. And the third found some kind of toxin in their bloodstream that the first didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, this is weird. And he says, well, let's exhume one of the first two victims and find out if they have this toxin.
And so we get introduced to Dr. Nemen here, who throws a little bit of a hissy fit as things stop with this. He also has like this sort of like, kind of demure redheaded daughter
who is part of the class of 89.
Right. We find that out later. I will also say, I think the character's name is Teresa.
Teresa, yep.
Really weird, like, delivery. Like, when she's talking with Mulder and Scully,
she's whiny.
She has such, like, a weird stilted delivery. I couldn't tell if it was on purpose or not.
I think her voice is a little odd, and she just has, like, a little bit of a whiny, like, character.
Maybe that's sort of, like, is, like, the Gen X, you know, the grunge generation.
I think she's also scared. I think you're supposed to get that she's nervous she's going to be next.
So, you know, while all this is going on, as they're trying to pull out this coffin, the strap breaks and the coffin does tumble.
It's like farcical.
Well, that's the thing. It almost came off the time. Like, can nothing go right for these people?
Exactly.
Like, first the turbulence, then the magic car clock. And
I think you're supposed to feel like, oh, this is like something's up here. It's not just your like run-of-the-mill like situation.
And Mulder finishes the act by making a nice little crack about like the height of the guy in the coffin. Wasn't on the varsity basketball team, I believe he said.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of Mulder stuff like that where he says things and you're just like, oh, you like groan. Like, oh, man. Like, so cheesy.
And I love, so the next scene is a great disparity between these two characters, right? Where we're in the lab and Scully is like totally professional, has the smock and the gloves on. Mulder has this like big ass flashbulb camera, like trying to interview Superman or something.
Yeah, so I think that Mulder is like taking pictures as if they've discovered an alien, and Scully's just like, take a chill pill, dude. Like, this is clearly a monkey. Like, let's take a second and calm down.
That's so interesting to me because, again, let's talk about this in the context of the episode. So we know that these class of 89 people were being abducted to have experiments performed on them. Was this guy like turned into an orangutan?
No, I think
orangutan,
it was like
set back in his place.
I think that they they put that there to so that you couldn't exhume the body and find evidence. I think was more.
Oh, so they just put a monkey body in there instead.
Yeah, but I think it was the parents that did that. Like, I think that they...
Wait, where's there an orangutan corpse on demand?
eBay. Calm down.
eBay.
I don't think you're supposed to look too far into that. I think
this is a show where I'm supposed to look so far into things.
No. I think you're supposed to be interested, but just sort of some things you have to accept as they happen.
I don't know. Now I want, like, a webisode about this kid's parents being like, all right, we need a monkey body.
Well, because you find out later that Billy Miles' dad knew about this the whole time.
Right, because that's the detective?
Yeah,
detective. Miles.
And so we're trying to cover this up. You know, they're trying to cover up that Billy Miles keeps taking his classmates into the woods because when they were graduating, all of them went into the woods and experienced some event.
And who hasn't, right? I mean, graduation parties are raucous.
They are nuts. But yeah, so and don't get me wrong, like, I do know a lot about the X-Files, but I don't know everything. And I think also from a perspective of, are you supposed to really understand it at this point? No.
Yeah.
So ride with it.
I'm going to ride with it, BB Rexa.
Thank you.
So, Scully, doing something that I find very relatable, having to transcribe her notes.
Yes, I know I said that. I was like, oh, look, she's doing what you do.
Yeah.
A little journalist.
In a little bit of a less, clinical basis. So yes. I try to be as clinical
as
possible.
So she's writing her report. So she needs to be keeping an eye on everything that's going on, and she's supposed to put down all of her, not only her evidence that she discovers, but her thoughts about how the investigation's going and if it's validated.
Right,
because that's the key. It's like he's investigating things and they don't believe like they should be.
She essentially has two missions in mind. One is like solve the case properly.
Yes.
The other is like see what Mulder is doing and see if the X-Files have any sort of like legitimacy to them.
Yeah, and I think that that's hard for her because she is somebody who I think immediately does like Mulder. Like they often are, like they're very like friendly with each other right away. There's no sort of like, she doesn't like him. She's annoyed with him a little because he's annoying.
No, because he does like stuff like, you know, she'll knock on his door or he knocks on her door, says, who is it? He's like, oh, it's Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. Like
I'm assuming is a reference to E.T.
And she like rolls her eyes, but it's in like a fun way, you know?
Yeah, but that's what I really enjoyed as well, is that they're, and I think, you know, you could very easily put them in like two different corners of like, they are so staunchly oppositional that it's very much like the odd couple.
But they're not,
but
you know?
But I think, you know, both are willing to sort of meet in the middle,
yes,
as you said before.
To an extent. And you'll find where they do butt heads, and in the series, there's moments where she's not willing to give up her sort of belief and he's not willing to bend and whatever. But for this pilot, you do sort of see that ability to like coincide with each other.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Well, let's go to the psych ward here, because
let's co-meet the vegetable, they call him.
Because one of the victims, I think the third victim, was someone who actually had died escaping from a mental institution and actually had ironically died. Well, no, died of exposure, right? Which was weird because it was in the middle of summer, which I don't know. I guess the aliens.
But that's just what the autopsy said.
So monkey bodies, like made up reasons.
Yes, exactly. There's some fishiness.
Dr. Nevin is not good at like cleaning his footprints.
Yeah, exactly. They're like not. This is probably the first time they've ever had to do something like this, and they're just kind of like winging it and hoping nobody investigates. But
we check in on two people from the class of '89 here. We have the aforementioned Billy Miles, who is in a waking coma, and then we have Aunt Peggy, who is
Aunt Peggy, who is
reading to him, and then she suddenly sort of like has a freak out. She begins to nosebleed as if she's traveling through time. And turns out that she's got the Skittles.
She's got those Skittles. So, we're supposed to connect that back to Karen, who is dead. And so, you know, these kids might be next, quote unquote. But I think that with Billy Miles, you're also supposed to, you know, maybe sympathize with those kids, too. So, but I will say there were some jarring moments in the hospital when the nurse calls, says that it's not her section of the produce aisle.
Yeah. This is a nurse that is clearly like trying to make light
needs
of what is
to
a very
take
dark
her,
childhood, like very unprofessional.
Needs to take her harassment and discrimination training clearly.
Yeah, she didn't watch that training video enough. I think she definitely needs to have a talk with HR at that hospital.
Yeah, for sure.
So we have a little bit of Scully doing her own sort of, they're both doing their night work in the woods, right? Scully finds this weird dirt, and then she stumbles into the sheriff, who is standing over the hill holding a gun with a light, you know, right behind them.
Yeah, because they find in the nose of the orangutan a silver implant.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mulder's like, we got to go back out in those woods. We got to see what's going on there. We need to go see, like, where they were found, and we'll find something there. It's a crime scene. We got to go investigate. She finds some sort of like chalky substance, and then the sheriff is like, you shouldn't be here. Like,
yeah,
clearly.
This is private property.
Yeah, or, you know, it's a crime scene, like, go away. But so they are sort of forced to leave.
And so Scully is, again, not going extraterrestrial. She says what it is. She thinks it's like a cult sacrifice.
Yeah, she thinks that because of the like, she's like, maybe it's ashes. Maybe it was like an occult thing.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, she gets a dose of the occult very soon when, so they have this weird, like, flash. And this is when they lose the 9 minutes. So were they just driving the car for 9 minutes and not remembering it?
No, I think the car shut down.
Well, then the car shuts down after the flash.
Yeah. Well, I think it just all happened simultaneously.
Yeah, but Mulder, like,
he's stoked.
He's like, he won the lottery.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that this is just supposed to be like a proof for him that, you know, something is going on here that's extraterrestrial in nature.
And it seems like Scully is getting a little on board here.
She's at least, like, freaked out.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because it really shows in that next scene where she is, as we mentioned before, a little bit of TNA with Gillian Anderson. Mm-hmm. And she thought she thinks she has the Skittles.
Yeah, they turn out to be mosquito bites, but she basically, like, strips down to go take a shower and has on this, like, really cute bra and panty set, and then is, like, freaked out because she sees these bumps on her back, and she goes and, like, knocks on Mulder's door. And this was, I think I mentioned this in our preview podcast, that sometimes there's an aspect to Scully's character that is a little like, I need a man's help. Like, I'm a damsel in distress. Like, mm-hmm. And she leans on Mulder in that way. Whereas, like, I don't think she would do that necessarily with anyone else. Like, I think her relationship with Mulder immediately is sort of, he can be, like, he's kind of her protector.
Yeah, it's
in a
interesting
way.
That she, like, she fell into his arms when he said that it was just mosquito bite.
Totally. And this is something that continues for them on a character level where who's to say if she had been assigned to another partner, she would feel that way. But I like to think that it's like their friendship is like immediate enough that she trusts him.
And then in turn, he opens up to her, right? Like,
then they like have a little like sleepover powwow.
Yeah. They're like, hey, let's call boys. You know, let's prank call mm-hmm. Dr. Nemen. Let's watch the Goonies. But yeah, so Mulder gives his backstory, which Angela talked about in the first episode. I thought it was interesting that it happened when he was 12.
Yeah.
He said.
No, he was 8.
Oh, he was 8. She was 12. Mm-hmm. But it tore their family apart. Without getting into too many spoilers.
Oh, wait, no. He was 12. She was 8.
Without getting into too much down the line, do we ever, like, flash back to that? Do we find out more? Because he says, like, quote, it tore my family apart. Do we find out more about
why?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We find out a lot about his family. We also find out a little bit about the night it happens. There are mm-hmm. some, like, without giving too much away, some hypnosis sessions.
Well, because I was going to say, because he says, like, yeah, I got hypnotized, and because of that, I can access
He remembers,
which is weird. It's almost like, I guess, we forget things from time to time, especially with the number of years that we take up, but I guess hypnosis is the thing that's able to, like, do a quick save on your brain so that you can access it at any point in time, despite the fact that ordinarily you might not remember it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that it's something that he uses a lot in his, I don't want to say studies, but like investigations. He'll often sort of go to like, okay, well, let's try hypnotism. Like, let's do the hypnotism.
I was intrigued by the idea that Mulder sort of like seemingly created the X-Files division for himself. I thought for some reason he had been like recruited to it.
So in a way he has been recruited to it,
but it seemed like he was like pursuing these things initially. I thought initially it was like, he's spooky Mulder. Let's like demote him and send him off to this. But no, it's more so seems
No. He
found these stuff.
He fell into it.
He was caught up in it. And that sort of just like led him into this corner.
Yeah. And there are instances where he's being guided. I won't say too much about it, but mm-hmm. There are a few characters that come along that sort of are trying to, I don't want to say help him sort of unveil this conspiracy, but are sort of like leading him in the direction of unveiling it. Maybe, mm-hmm. you know, there are people who are not necessarily on board with whatever these government officials are doing.
Gotcha. And that's also why he's like, you know, I have a lot of vested interest in this because this might be like, this is the first time in a while that I might be actually proven correct on one
right. Yeah. I can't imagine like some of his cases, maybe he's sort of, you know, like they're clearly, not giving him budget. And now that Scully's also been assigned.
Yeah. And if he's doing stuff on his own, they're like, well, it's your opinion versus ours. So we're going to go with the people who aren't called spooky for a living.
Yeah. And I think also he may be dedicating more time to this than to his other work, which mm-hmm. I imagine he is assigned to other things. Like
he I don't know.
And no, I think he is. And I think that that's the issue is that he feels like this is the where he's needed most. But they're like, no, like this is the FBI.
Mm-hmm. So we hear Mulder gets a mysterious call that says they found Peggy. Mm-hmm. Peggy's been running, which is odd because we saw Peggy in a chair.
Yes, she
last
was
time.
Constrained to a wheelchair.
But now she's dead. Her watch reads 903. And also to add insult to injury, as it were, not only has the orangutan corpse been stolen, but the lab's been burned down.
No, it wasn't just the lab. It was their hotel.
Oh, I didn't realize. So was the lab in their hotel?
No, the lab wasn't burned down. Their hotel was burned down with all of the lab results in it.
Oh, so they brought the stuff to the hotel.
Yeah, remember how she had the x-ray on the lampshade?
Yes.
Everything that they had up until this point about the investigation was in their rooms. So somebody arsoned their hotel to get rid of that information.
And somehow this is like the game changer for Mulder.
Yes.
He puts everything together and he says the Billy Miles, aka the vegetable, is the killer.
Yeah. And I think that that's because of who his dad is.
Yeah. I don't know. But then he comes back. First off, there's this weird thing where when we come back from the act, they like randomly put the time in the bottom corner.
Yes.
I don't know does that happen? And I just missed it.
Okay. Yeah. So throughout the episode, they're doing things like telling you where they're located with the bottom third.
I just I didn't really need like the digital clock in the bottom.
I think that was supposed to represent sort of what was going on with their like loss of time and stuff.
But Mulder just goes like a mile a minute, and I was so
your face was like alarmed.
I was so stunned when he was like, okay, the forest is controlling them, and there's this just genetic mutation, and then there's this like this alien impulse around like summoning Billy, and I was just it took me a second, like I had to huff a few, you know, Mulder spray paint to understand what was going on.
I don't think you were supposed to understand all of it anyway. I think you're supposed to sort of feel like Scully, like, what's happening? You know, so I think that that's completely fine.
So it's more like he's off in his own train of thought and you're like running after me, like, take me to Boston.
Yeah, take me to Boston. But I do think it's something that, you know, it's clear that he has a vested interest in this. Like, he understands what's going on, you know, which is crazy.
Well, they go to, as the nurse so delicately puts it, the produce section, and they visit Billy. And yeah, Billy's
just chilling there.
Well, but his feet are dirty AF.
Which is weird because that's not what they point out. Like, she flips up.
I think maybe his feet are not dirty. Like, oh, his feet are very muddy and dirty. And you think, like, maybe the nurse is just proven herself to be so negligent that she just doesn't wash his feet.
Meanwhile, like, Scully pulls out, pieces of
the dust, the sort of ash substance. The supposed cult stuff was
on his feet.
But yeah, the first thing I was like, wow, his feet are so dirty.
That's what I thought too.
He was running through the woods.
Yeah, I don't think maybe they weren't dirty and that's just his feet. But either way,
naturally dirty feet.
Either way, Scully proved that like he was not in his bed. Like he was in the woods. So going on?
They're going back to the woods. I loved this like frantic piano music of representing running through the woods.
This was like action packed.
It was very jovial in a manner of speaking. And now we get like a little bit of a hunt down here, right? Because Dr. Nemin, Mulder finds Dr. Nemin about to like, he finds Billy over Teresa. We gotta pass this, but Teresa essentially, with her odd demeanor, approached Mulder and Scully and was like, something happened at a graduation party with the class of 89. All my friends are dying. I'm next. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope.
Yeah.
And now she's being taken.
Yeah, now she's being taken by Billy. Annoyingly, and I don't know if you picked up on this, this often happens in the X-Files, but Mulder and Scully are separated.
They really, like, whenever they went to the woods, they, for some reason, go in completely separate directions.
Right, but they also tend to do this throughout the series, where right when you get some kind of proof that something's going to happen, Scully doesn't see it. And so it's like, it's like she's seeing it from the perspective of, it's just light. So she can't substantiate anything that Mulder says. You know, so in her report, it's like, did you see this? No, like I didn't, but like, I don't disbelieve him.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's talk about what happens here. So Dr. Nemin is about to shoot.
I was going
to
say, could I? I don't even know.
He tries to shoot Billy.
Yes.
Mulder stops him.
Yes.
And then like this light washes over them. And now Billy is like completely cured. Like he's conscious.
He's conscious. Yeah.
So was he just not before? Like, are the aliens done with him now?
I guess so. Yeah.
They're like, oh, all right, well, listen, you've been snitched on.
Yeah.
I think we're done using you as an envoy right now.
Yeah, I think so. And it's also, like, this is something that has always, like, plagued me with the X-Files is, like, this first episode, like, very quickly, like, substantiates extraterrestrial, like, existence. And then in the following episodes, you're sort of put in a place of saying, like, wait, are they real? Mm. Are they not real? Are they real? Like, it's constantly flipping back and forth. So,
oh, interesting. Okay, so it's
sometimes you're wondering if the conspiracy isn't just to cover them up, but it's to like use them as a cover up for something else. Like,
interesting. So it's like, you know, what's the orangutan body and what's the real McCoy?
Yeah, like exactly. Like, we are saying that there's no such thing as aliens because we want you to investigate aliens and not investigate the testing we're doing on humans.
That interesting. Kind of a thing. So the real
conspiracy is that there is another conspiracy to hide that conspiracy, you know, so it's very convoluted.
I almost always thought it was going to be like something supernatural human. I didn't realize that it's almost like Scooby-Doo where like, oh, you dress up like an alien
to
scare the kids away from the amusement park.
Yeah. So you don't really get that in this episode. You do sort of just think that it's aliens, and that the government's hiding it in some way because you see the cigarette smoking man going into the director's office after Scully leaves the implant there. And at the end, his scene in the big warehouse. But I think you're supposed to think that maybe they do exist at this point.
Yeah, so basically Billy explains, he gets hypnotized and he sort of just fills in the blanks that the class of 89 was getting loose, having a great graduation party. I realize now, you know, my graduation party was sort of like that all-night lock-in, and I realize maybe that's a reason why they do it. It's because they don't want any alien abductions to happen that can last for years and years.
Yeah, potentially.
So basically Billy has been used as sort of like the Uber to chauffeur all of his classmates to the woods so the aliens can like periodically abduct them and perform experiments on them and seemingly kill them in doing so.
Exactly. Like, I don't think that you're supposed to know the intention of whatever is abducting them, but there's tests being done and sometimes they're dying.
Yeah. So Scully, you know, writes this all up. She meets with Blevins. He basically like reads her for her reports, right?
Yeah, he's like, this is not helpful. Like, we asked you to go down there and investigate, and she's like, no, you asked me to do my job, and I did my job.
And he's like, well, to be fair, like, there's nothing substantiated here. And then she says, ah ha ha ha, check out this little nubbin that I found in the orangutan nose.
And she says, basically all the evidence was destroyed except for this because she had it in her pocket.
Yeah, but to that point, you know, Blevins is still trying to cover up the blemishes. Billy's case file has been like completely erased, and we see the final shot of the episode is like Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark style. The cigarette smoking man took the probe, put it in with seemingly a bunch of others. So
identical.
Well, because we had heard early on in this episode, right, that Mulder had said like this was happening all around the country.
Yeah, so he's met people before, and I think that I'm not sure if we'll touch on a lot of the episodes where this is the case, but other people who have had implants removed, and you know whatever effect that's had on them, but. You know, so this is where they've gotten, like, the government is covering this up, is what you're supposed to see. And then you're also supposed to, be super, super freaking curious about what's in the rest of those boxes.
Exactly, because, like, that was just one little,
tiny little box
size and a whole warehouse full of things housed in the Pentagon as well.
In the Pentagon, yep.
And that's the pilot of the X-Files.
So what'd you think?
I mean, I really enjoyed it. Like, I think the mystery I wouldn't say was simple. I'm still a bit confused.
I'm still a bit confused, and I've seen it like 17 million times.
But
so.
I think it does a really good job of like throwing us into the action. It sprinkles in some serialization, right, with Mulder stuff and getting to know these characters.
Yeah, it's like character development.
But it is largely like a Monster of the Week thing. I'm glad it started out with aliens too, because that seems like, to your point, even though we do go some of the more supernatural route, I'm assuming the home base is usually with aliens.
Yeah, the home base is usually with this sort of, like I said, government conspiracy, aliens, like some sort of like extraterrestrial vibe to it that's a little bit more, I don't want to say like serious, but more of a serious vibe to it. Or it's, you know, funny and it's like vampires.
But I think the strongest thing for me, honestly, was I think this did an exceptional job introducing and immediately characterizing Mulder and Scully.
Yeah, you know who they are.
You not only do you know who they are, but like you talked about before, like they're immediately building a relationship.
Their chemistry is really good, too.
They work really well together, and that really, like, happily surprised me the most. Because, again, I think you approach a pilot with sort of, like, kid gloves because it sometimes doesn't represent where the show eventually goes. But if at least they're taking that and they're moving forward with it, I'm going to be very excited to see where we go from here.
Right, and I do think that they perhaps at some point hoped that this would be more of, like, like what Lost will be, where it is sort of just, like, not one through line, but more of a story rather than like this serialized thing, but it becomes more episodic, which I think is really good.
So obviously this is like our first proper episode ever. So we're probably going to have, you know, things evolve as we move through it. I want to try something starting out here, Angela, to have a segment every week called the Spook of the Week in honor
of the Week
in honor of Spooky Mulder. Can we find like the character, whether main or like secondary or tertiary who just like really stuck out to you this episode for their weirdness?
Yes. And I'm going to say, for me, it's probably Billy Miles.
Okay.
Just because of his whole vibe, which is just wildly weird.
He very much had 90s hair, right? Like, didn't
yes, he had the
part?
Floofy hair. He also just had a really good, like, vacant stare.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go someone who's actually pretty close to Billy Miles. My spook of the week has to be that nurse.
Yeah, she was rough.
The produce section nurse. Just yeah. Listen, you do what you need to get through the day, but don't externalize that,
yeah.
You know?
So, yeah.
Look, she had like three lines, but that is enough to earn Spook of the Week, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I guess like we're sort of saying our Spook of the Week is somebody who is just kind of like stood out as a little bit creepy.
Yeah, exactly. Like who are we going to make fun of if we're in Quantico?
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. Because I would say like you could also say the cigarette smoking man, but I don't think that he was that spooky.
I also feel like we want to reserve that spookiness for what's to come, you know, yeah. Future episodes. But
yeah.
Speaking of that, Angela, so we did it. We are one down.
Here we go.
Many to go. We have started on a long journey here, a long drive. I've got plenty of sunflower seeds. I don't know about you.
I do not.
All right. So don't worry. You can dip into mine. So next week, we're going to get into a couple of episodes here. And again, these were chosen by you. Mm-hmm. And we're going to cover two season one episodes. We're doing a doubleheader. And these are two, from what you told me, two Monster of the Week episodes. We are
yes.
watching Season 1, Episode 3, Squeeze.
Yes.
And Season 1, Episode 21, Tomb. So we're going Alpha and the Omega, like the very beginning of the season, near the end of the season.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I hope and encourage everybody to watch these prior to listening to our recording on them, so, I, you know, I won't give away anything now, but they relate. The same characters in both.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yes, yeah, so that's why we're watching them together.
Okay, awesome. So we have a little bit of a recurring character here. Anything you want to tease us about with Squeeze and Tombs?
I think that these two episodes will very quickly help you with more of the creepier stuff.
Okay.
So it is, again, like an investigatory type situation. Like they're trying to solve a mystery, but I find these to be psychologically much more creepy than what we just watched.
Okay, so we're going to have a lot of people in the running for Spook of the Week next week.
Yeah, and these are not also not related to aliens.
Okay. Ooh, okay. So we're getting a little bit of a different flavor from what we immediately
yes.
got. Well, I mean, either way, I'm very excited to go on this journey with you in so many
Pumped.
Ways. And then we want you all to be in the journey alongside us, the many sunflower seeds that we're chomping on.
You're just fixated on it.
And I'm very intrigued about whether sunflower seeds are good. So you have a bunch of ways you can send us feedback about these episodes. You can, of course, reach out to us on social media. Angela is at Ange Pelagi. I am at A Mike Bloom Type. And of course, we have at Post Show Recaps. You can also email us if you have questions or things you want to talk about. You can email xfiles@postshowrecaps.com or bloomfiles@postshowrecaps.com. So yeah, I mean, you can ask questions about the episodes that we're going to
just
watch.
Just remember to, in the subject line, if it is a question that gives away any detail about the series, to put "for Angela's eyes only."
Yeah, basically, because
please
I'm the Billy Miles right now, sort of like herding all the questions together, and I prefer not to get incidentally spoiled about future things. So yeah, if you have questions about like future episodes and things, just put like "for Angela" in the subject line so that I know to not necessarily read it. That being said, so we are admittedly banking a few of these episodes in advance because we got stuff to do in our lives.
We got some stuff to do.
So that being said, we are going to work on a listener feedback show. I believe what's going to happen is we're going to do one more podcast after next week about season one. And then I think after that, we'll put in like a little bit of a feedback show to get everyone's thoughts on basically our first month of podcasting or so. So keep sending that in, even though, you know, we won't obviously respond to your feedback next episode. We will a couple of podcasts down the line. And let us know your thoughts in general, too. Chat it up on the Post Show Recaps patron Discord as well. You know, there's a lot of great X-Files fans out there. And so, again, while being respectfully courteous when it comes to future plot points, I'm very intrigued to see what people have to say.
Yeah, don't be like too detailed, but vague is fine.
Yeah, but I'm intrigued to see what people say about, you know, this pilot, about Squeeze and Tombs
mm-hmm.
coming up.
Squeeze and Tombs.
Squeeze and Tombs, that old pair. Well, I think that's going to do it here.
Okay.
Angela. I'm going to go dig into a bag of Skittles now.
Yeah, ew, gross. I'm never going to eat red Skittles again.
But we're going to be back next week here on The Bloom Files, again, covering Season 1, Episode 3, Squeeze, Season 1, Episode 21, Tomb. It's going to be a doubleheader here on The Bloom Files, and I cannot wait. Huge, huge thanks to the indescribable Corey B. for his toe-tapping theme song to The Bloom Files, which you'll be hearing again in 1 week's time. But until then, case closed.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.